All right, we are live, ladies and gentlemen. Over the past week or so, student-led protests have essentially taken over college campuses across the United States, demonstrating on behalf of the pro-Palestine movement. The radical rhetoric, the disruption of classes, and the crackdown by police have stirred up a lot of attention on this matter, but many important aspects are being ignored. Who's funding this movement? What are the true intentions of this protest? And how are these factors affected by the upcoming presidential election? Join us as we talk about all this and more on episode 447 of the In the Tank podcast. All right, welcome to the In the Tank podcast. As always, I'm your host, Donald Kendall, and joining me today, we've got a full crew. We've got Jim Lakely, VP of the Heartland Institute. How are you doing today, good sir?
I'm doing just great. Thank you for asking. Although I'll probably be doing less great as the podcast goes on, because two of the videos that we are going to play today triggered me. One of them, I actually wanted us to play. The other one, Donnie insisted that we play. So trigger warning for myself and all others who are annoyed by BS.
Yeah, it's Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris singing a duet. So get ready for that one. No, I'm just kidding. Also joining us, we have Justin Haskins, director of the Socialism Research Center here at the Heartland Institute. How are you doing today, good sir?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, all right. Good.
That's it.
Good.
That's all I got. Also, I know. You're waiting. You're waiting for something. I was waiting
for you to like talk about our sponsors or something.
I'm a little more refined today. I'm trying to dress it up. I'm trying to be a little more professional.
Yeah, he's got court later. Also joining us, we have Chris Delgo, editorial director here at the Heartland Institute. How are you doing today, good sir?
Doing pretty good. I think we should just get right to it, Donnie.
We have a lot to talk about.
We do.
Before we get into it, I do have that message that I say at the beginning of all of these podcasts, that if you're listening to the audio-only version of this, you're probably catching the show on a Friday or later. If you are, leave a review for us on iTunes. That'd be greatly appreciated. And maybe you should consider joining us a day earlier on Thursdays at noon Central Time. Oh, man. Central Time, where we are live streaming this on Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, X. You can join the conversation, throw your comments and questions in the chat. Maybe we'll show your comments on the screen. Maybe we'll address your questions on the fly. You could also help us out in a number of ways. One, we have Super Chat functionality enabled. If you want to support the show that way to guarantee your comment or question is read on air. Or you can just hit that like button, share this content, subscribe if you haven't already, or leave a comment under the video. All those things help break through those big tech algorithms that prevent content like this from being shown to more people. But like I said, we've got a lot to talk about. I do have a Davos Watch segment for the end of the episode, assuming we have time. I think we'll make time. We haven't done Davos Watch in a month or so, so got to get back in the saddle of doing that. But before we talk about any of our main topics, do you remember back in 2022 when the Department of Homeland Security was putting together the Disinformation Governance Board? I think that we and others referred to it as the Ministry of Truth. This agency was very short-lived. It suffered through a firestorm of public criticism before being either disbanded entirely or more likely folded into an existing agency or wing of the Department of Homeland Security. But do you remember the lady that was tapped to be in charge of the Disinformation Governance Board? Oh, you don't remember? Don't worry. We have a video that should jog your memory. Go ahead and play that great clip.
Is really quite ferocious. It's when a huckster takes some lies and makes them sound precocious by saying them in Congress or a mainstream outlet. So disinformation's origins are slightly less atrocious. It It's how you hide a little lie, little lie. It's how you hide a little lie, little lie. It's how you hide a little lie, little lie. When Rudy Giuliani shared bad intel from Ukraine, or when TikTok influencers say COVID can cause pain, they're laundering disinfo when we really should take note and not support their lies with our wallet, voice, or vote. Oh, in.
Okay, we could stop it there. Jim, did you want to hear more?
I actually no. think she's pretty talented.
Oh, you did? Okay, let's go ahead. Oh, dang it. Never mind. I don't have control. There we go.
By saying them in Congress or a mainstream outlet, so disinformation's origin seems likely less atrocious.
Oh, my God. I wonder if she wrote those lyrics or not. Do you think she did?
That lady. That's the lady that was put in charge, or as I like to call her, Weird Gal Jankovic, singing a rendition of the popular Mary Poppins song, reworked to be a song about disinformation. You know, and you didn't, and you thought maybe we didn't tap the best and brightest to be in charge of important bureaucratic positions in our federal government. Well, if you missed her, don't worry, because she is back, folks. She is going to be heading the new organization called the American Sunlight Project, a new disinformation tracking organization based out of Washington, D.C. So, Justin, how excited are you about this? Do you think she's going to follow up her hit single of 2022 with a new song? What are your thoughts on this story?
Anything is possible. That's what I've learned. Anything is possible with the Biden administration and where they drag these people up. I don't know. I know that the Sunlight Project, or whatever we're calling this, whatever it's called, that is not part of the Biden administration. So they threw her out. They didn't welcome her back in. So naturally, she started her own organization. Sadly, she'll probably make millions and millions of dollars, because that's how this seems to go. There seems to be an endless slush fund of money for authoritarian think tanks. So that's, you know, that's fun. I think the most disturbing part of all of it, though, really isn't even the disinformation board part, because that's just assumed that that's what they're doing. Of course, that's what we know that they're doing that. I don't even know why they need a special disinformation agency. I thought they just called that the FBI. And don't they work with the, you know, all the big social media companies? Like, isn't that already a thing? Do we need a new agency to already? It's just redundant. I don't think we need that. The most disturbing part, though, is the amount, the ego that you have to have to write that song and put that script together and then put the video together, video record yourself, watch that back, watch the video, look at it, evaluate yourself and say, this is pretty good. I'm going to put this out. The level of ego you need to have to do that is so off the charts. I don't know why we're showing a picture of Alex Jones. So off the charts. So off the charts that honestly, it's like this. It shows you how insane, not just the government has become and the kind of people that they find for the government, but just like the time in which we live, where this is somehow, I mean, I know that it was embarrassing and she ended up not being, you know, picked for this job, but it wasn't really because of the singing. It was because of the disinformation board thing, you know? So, I mean, the fact that this person can be a prominent person, can actually almost have position of power, can create a think tank that's probably going to bring in tons of money, millions and millions of dollars, I'm sure. It's a sign of the decline of America. It really is. Now, with that said, it's wildly entertaining. And so I am rooting for another song.
Do you want us to play the song again? Because we could play the song.
I mean, we could.
No. We're going to lose all of our viewers.
You're going to lose me.
So according to their website, because their website is live, according to their website, they focus on work in three areas. Number one, expose deceptive information practices and the networks and money that drive them. Number two, educate the public about the threats we face and the effects of disinformation on society. And three, engage with policymakers to return truth to our national discourse. So, I mean, I'm personally very interested in just like this topic in general, because I do think that mis and disinformation is a big problem, and one that will get worse with the increased use of AI and deepfake technology. But I wonder, Can I really count on the American Sunlight Project to track down the Chinese global propaganda network that we covered pretty extensively on episode 434 of our show? Or should I expect them to expose the slanted liberal media depictions of prominent right-leaning figures? Or should I just expect them to run cover for the different corporate media narratives and fact-checking anything that comes out that's critical of the Biden administration? What do you think about this, Chris? Should I hold my breath, or should I expect them to be just, partisan hacks?
The latter. And so here's my big problem with this. This woman was one of the biggest, vocal proponents of anyone who was questioning the COVID mandates, face masks, the vaccines. And gee, now we know a couple of years after the fact that everything that they were telling us and everything that she was supporting was actually totally wrong. Face masks didn't work. Social distancing didn't work. The 2 weeks to bend the curve to stop the spread did not work. And probably most importantly, their obsession with getting Americans quote unquote vaccinated, because this is not a vaccine, it just is not, actually did a lot more damage than probably help people. And just a couple of days ago, AstraZeneca came out and admitted that their vaccine for COVID, which is not a vaccine actually, is causing rare blood clots for certain people and death. So everything that we were saying in real time, which they were saying, no, that's not true, that's misinformation, that's disinformation, actually was true. And everything that they were saying and she was saying, turns out that it was misinformation, disinformation, or what I like to call actually lies. So I am just so sick and tired of these people saying, we're right, you're wrong. And then after the fact, when the facts prove that we were right and they were wrong, it's like there's never any accountability. If she would come out and say, you know what, I am really, really sorry, I had all that COVID stuff wrong, please forgive me, I would actually say, wow, they kind of seem like they're genuine. But no, she has never, not once, admitted that all the stuff that she was saying under the quote banner of preventing misinformation, disinformation was actually itself misinformation and disinformation. It is mind-boggling to me.
What if she came out and apologized for all those things, but to the tune of like a Michael Jackson song? Would you accept that?
I would. I would.
Jim, I mean, I don't know. Thoughts on this? I mean, do you think that this project is going to be anything close to what it could be, which really is something that I think is needed, like this idea of tracking down mis and disinformation and dispelling that and all of that sort of thing? But like, come on, like my knee jerk is that this is just going to be partisan hackery. What do you think?
Actually, it's not needed. We've not needed this in our country for our entire history. And it's only because the Marxist leftist commies that have risen to power in the Biden administration that this was even entertained. I mean, and so, of course, they go into the private sector where she'll be able to grift from wealthy Marxists to donate to her nonprofit, make herself some nice coin. But it is always these, dystopian, un-American outfits that call themselves something like the American Sunlight Project. And it's always the opposite of what they actually do, because the biggest purveyors by far, the biggest purveyors of misinformation and disinformation is our legacy media and our government ruling class in this country. And it is podcasts like this, and it is frankly social media and Twitter and other places where you get the counterspin to the endless parade of lies that we are fed by our government and by our legacy media. So, I mean, even their mission says is to expose deceptive information practices and the networks and money that drive them. That's number one. That's their number one objective. It's like, great. Those networks are CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS. So that's already been identified. And the money that drives them are the advertisers on those networks. So look, you don't even need to put up a whole new organization to figure that out. Nina Jankowicz is an East German apparatchik with a happy song in her heart. And so, you know, she embraced the moniker of the Mary Poppins of disinformation. Mockery is what this continues to deserve. But we should also have a wary eye on this, because even in the lead up to the election, Nina Jankowicz herself called the Hunter laptop story a fairy tale and, of course, mis- and disinformation. So we don't need any of this stuff. I don't even care what China may inflict on our country or Russia or anybody else. In a free society with a First Amendment that has any meaning at all, none of this disinformation, misinformation organizations are necessary, because the American people are supposed to be trusted to be able to figure this kind of stuff out on their own. And instead, we have operations in place from our government spokespeople to our legacy media, whose primary job, it seems, is to misinform the American people. And if you only rely on those outlets to shape your perception of how the world really works, you are the one who is a victim of dis and misinformation.
My question is there anything that these folks have identified? Let me put it this way. Is there anything they can point to that was like a primary campaign slogan for the right, or a major moral or social or economic or whatever battle on the right that they have definitively proven that the right's been wrong about over the past like 20 years? And the only thing I can think of really that the right would all, pretty much unanimous or not unanimously, but many people on the right would look at and say, yeah, there was a lot of things that we got wrong there. It was like the war in Iraq. That's probably one of those things that the left, I think, feels like, yeah, we were right. And we've been proven right. You know, no weapons of mass destruction, that kind of thing. Whether you believe that or not is a different issue, but that's definitely something. But I can't think of anything else, truly. And the list on the left is unbelievable. Like just since like the last 5 years, you know, like it's been an unbelievable series of promises made by the left, predictions by the right about those promises being wrong, and the right being correct over and over and over and over and over again, and not on small issues, on really important issues, as well as a bunch of less important issues. I mean, I seriously, it sounds so partisan to say it this way, because the thing that everybody wants to do is say, well, both sides get things wrong. Yeah, both sides do get things wrong, obviously. But when it comes to really important big picture things, I really can't think of anything that I would look at and say, yeah, the right, but we're totally, it turns out we thought we had it right, but you know what? We were completely wrong about that. And there's been some times too where it was like a little bit of a gamble, you know? I mean, COVID was one of those things. There's a lot of people on the right pretty early on when we didn't have a ton of data that was like, you know what? I don't think we should shut the entire economy down for this. And we should kind of play this out. And, you know, and they could have been wrong at that point in time. Some of those people, there wasn't a ton of data at the very beginning. They could have been wrong, the people saying that, but they weren't. They were right. And virtually every other major issue, it's been the same thing. And you can go back and look at the left. Sometimes it's they're lying, but sometimes the left is just flat out wrong. I mean, the Obamacare, right? Everyone's going to save thousands of family. Average family is going to save whatever it was, $2,500 or something like that. If you like your doctor, you can keep it. The numerous climate change predictions about what's going to happen over the course of, that's going back decades and decades and decades, but they've been doing that basically every week for the past 20 or 30 years, making new predictions. They've never come true. Almost none of them have been accurate. All the COVID stuff, completely 100% wrong. The Trump tax cuts, they were 100% wrong about that being only something that was going to benefit the wealthy. It turns out it disproportionately benefited in terms of percentage saved the middle class and working class people. The list, all of the Joe Biden crazy things that we could talk about, the way that they handled Afghanistan, that pullout, the transitory inflation, the fact that oil prices and gas prices, that they were coming down when in reality, we knew they were just, burning through all of our oil reserves that they had, our strategic oil reserves. Now all those are gone. that being tough on Iran, how has that worked out? You know, in the Middle East being peaceful, the Middle East being the adults in the room, you know, Donald Trump's going to destroy the world. You know, like, we could go on and on and on and on and on. And like over and over and over again, what we've seen is that the people saying that you should trust us to give you the right answers are the people who almost never give you the right answers.
Sure.
So, and so at the very least, forget about just the general morality of the idea of a, you know, of the concept of a disinformation board. Like, even if they were accurate more often than not, I would still be opposed to it. Like on, you know, freedom grounds, on liberty, you know, for that perspective. But shouldn't you, putting that aside, shouldn't you at least be required to get some things right occasionally before you put yourself forward as the people who should be the arbiters on getting things right?
Like
that should be a prerequisite, you know, but it's not.
I'm going to watch her career with great interest. I'm very curious of the things that they target, because like, I know, like I said, I brought up that like Chinese global propaganda thing, you know, as much as like the Russia, you know, disinformation was kind of blown out of proportion in regards to the 2020 election or 2016 election. Like, that is a thing that's going on. There are plenty of countries out there that have agencies dedicated to sowing disinformation out there. So it's definitely, in my opinion, the thing that's needed. I just don't trust this person to be in charge of it. But anyways, we got to get on to our main topics here. So last week, a pro-Palestine protest started in Columbia University when students took over the university's Morningside Heights campus lawn. Since then, the protests have spread nationwide. Essentially identical protests have popped up in colleges across the United States, including Harvard, Yale, Berkeley, Ohio State, Emory College in Georgia, University of Texas, colleges in New York, Wisconsin, Arizona, I don't know, seemingly everywhere.
Indiana the protests, University, my alma mater.
There you go. The protests are demanding that the academic institutions stop doing business with Israel or companies that are connected to the Israeli military's war in Gaza. I actually had to look pretty hard to figure out what their demands were, because I don't think your average protester knows, but I found that in one of the articles that I was reading. The protests have been mostly peaceful, although there are rampant reports of these protests disrupting students' abilities to get to class. In some cases, the protesters have broken into buildings and taken over those buildings. On some campuses, protesters and counter-protesters have gotten into fights. Obviously, there is a police response in some of these cases. So, you know, I use the term mostly peaceful in quotes, generally speaking. But Chris, I feel like you've been keeping a closer ear on what's going on here. Can you kind of fill in the gaps of what I've left out?
Okay. Well, first of all, this is not an organic grassroots student-led protest like the 1960s, where students were protesting against the Vietnam War because they did not want to go fight in a war that they didn't believe in. So let's just get that right off the bat. This has nothing to do with students, you know, protesting for, you know, something that they truly believe in. What's actually happening here, and this is very, very apparent, is this is a coordinated effort from high above, the George Soroses of the world, the Tides Foundation, supplying money to their shock troops, their Antifa, you know, shock troops, their professional rioters, professional anarchists, who are going into these places and setting up encampments. And when you look at the like the flyover, whether it's, you know, a drone or whatever, it's so obvious that this is a coordinated, you know, non-organic protest, because all the tents are new. These are literally catered. These are not students going in there with, you know, sincere feelings about really trying to stop what they might consider to be a genocide. That's not what this is about. This is extremely anti-Semitic. I have been watching videos of this across the board, you know, from the University of Texas to my, you know, University of Indiana, Indiana University. And these are, you know, professional agitators who are hiding behind students, and they are trying to, you know, just promote pro-Hamas, you know, pro-terrorist, you know, anti-America rhetoric. It is in Donnie in very many places getting somewhat violent, I would say. This morning, I was watching live coverage as the California Highway Patrol and some other California police forces had to go in there and dismantle a, I don't know what you call it, a plywood tent city, whatever. I don't even know. And they had to go in there and drag these protesters out. Okay. So these are not a bunch of, peace loving beatniks like it was in the 1960s saying, hey, that war in Vietnam's a bad thing and we shouldn't, fight it. This is completely different. It's really scary. It's really shocking. The things that they are saying are vile. I won't even repeat anything because it's just disgusting. And this is, just I think what is the new norm on American campuses. This is, I think, and I'm sure we'll go into many elements and facets of this, but this is the consequences of the long march through the institutions, neo-Marxism, cultural Marxism. They see through everything through the lens of oppressor and victim. Somehow, some way, in their warped view, they have labeled Palestine and Hamas as the victims, and Israel is somehow the oppressor, even though on October 7th, Hamas went in and engaged in a mass murder of Israeli citizens, took hundreds hostage. This is so backwards, so incredibly crazy. I can't believe this is happening in the United States of America in the year 2024.
Okay, according to one of our watchers right now, we are enabling genocide just by talking about this. So, I want to tread lightly because, our words are bullets, so we got to watch out. He also says that, what's so hard to believe or what's so hard to understand? They're protesting genocide. And it's like, okay, so like the schools are committing the genocide. Like, that's what I'm trying to wrap my head around. If it's something like I said before, what their intentions are of trying to like stop the schools from having some sort of investment in the country that they perceive as being involved in some, that I can understand. Just protesting the schools and breaking into the schools and taking.
Johnny, I'm sorry, but I gotta chime in here. So this guy NJ says, so why did Hamas get a green light with the stand down? That is completely false. You're wrong. You have no clue what you're talking about. Please stop spewing disinformation and misinformation.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, we need Nita Jagowitz in here.
Literally.
Yeah, let's start playing the song. Anytime there's disinformation, we're gonna start playing the song. So, Jim. Jump in here. What are your thoughts on the matter?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I want to get to the video that I played so we can get back to talking about the nature of these protests and what's going on here. And like the title card of the podcast today says that cultural Marxists have taken over our college campuses, and they actually have been. This is an ongoing project for decades. I mean, I graduated from college in 1992. You could see the green shoots, if not halfway mature plants, of the cultural Marxist takeover of our academic institutions even then. And I'll just note that, do you know where you don't see these sort of protests happening? That's at trade schools where kids actually learn marketable skills for life. I'm just saying that when you go to an elite institution, you seem to have a lot of time on your hands. But, before throwing it to Justin, and maybe we'll play a video that kind of points out the absurdity of this, is that this is done, and I think it was on Columbia that, at least if you want to believe the mayor and a spokesman for the New York Police Department, said that the majority of the, 100 kids that they had arrested at Columbia University for taking over and vandalizing Hamilton Hall, they said that a lot of them, or if not most of them, were not students at Columbia University, that they were basically professional agitators. And kids get into these schools for activism. I was reading about there was a pretty famous, I guess, and maybe internet famous student at Vanderbilt who got arrested and was told that he was going to be expelled. And he explained on his own X feed that one of the things that got him a free ride to Vanderbilt, one of the most elite institutions in this country, was that he was a professional, or not professional, but he was involved almost exclusively as his only activity outside of academics as an activist, as a left-wing agitator. And that is what got the attention of Vanderbilt. And that's what got him into the school presumably on a free ride. So our institutions in general, from government to media, but especially academia, have been taken over by cultural Marxists. The ones that were agitating for revolution, the ones that were fans of Mao and his little red book, those people, when they were students in the 60s, are now in charge of all of these institutions. And they are attracting to themselves and perpetuating a fantasy of Marxist revolution finally happening here in the United States. And they've been training kids to hate their country and to express that hatred violently whenever an opportunity arises. These are the professionals that are helping to organize and perpetuate these things. And as Chris mentioned, if you see photos of these encampments on these universities, it's amazing how many of the tents that they're staying in are exactly the same. You know, who did the mass bulk ordering of all the tents they needed at Columbia on Amazon or wherever the hell they got them? So, you know, this is not surprising, because what you're seeing now is the opportunity the cultural Marxists who run these institutions needed to foster some, you know, some. You need a little bit of violence and agitation every once in a while to keep the troops happy. And so that's, I think, mainly what's going on here, because when you see interviews of these kids, they actually have no idea what the hell's going on over there in the Middle East and in Israel. They're chanting from the river to the sea, they can't tell you what river or what sea. So these are young skulls full of mush, as Rush Limbaugh used to say, being corrupted by the cultural Marxists that run these universities.
Yeah, I just thought this was like an immersion class where you get to kind of LARP as a revolutionary for a semester or something like that. Like, I thought that was just part of the college experience. I think that's what half of these people are doing. But Justin, lay it out for us. What's your perspective on this?
Well, so, I mean, I think there's so much, a lot of good points have already been made. And I think there's so much that could be said about how the education system has been completely corrupted over many, many decades, and what's the genesis of that, and why have people allowed it to happen? I mean, as frustrating as it is to watch and see this, it becomes even more frustrating when you realize that we're probably going to be paying all of these students' education bills at some point in the future, sooner rather than later, probably. And so, you know, it's absurd to me that. Republicans, conservatives, like we get up here, we complain about this. And I think we're entitled to do that. I think that there are many good arguments we're making. But really, when you think about it, this was obvious that we were headed in this direction many decades ago, as Jim pointed out. And although at Columbia specifically, that's a private university, and there isn't a whole lot you can necessarily do from a policymaking perspective to prevent something like this from occurring, I think it is completely absurd that Republican-led states allowed their universities, their state universities, like Indiana is a good example. Chris mentioned that earlier. University of Texas, we've seen a lot of these protests happen, to become breeding grounds for Marxism over the course of decades and decades and decades. Why did Republicans allow that to happen? Republicans control more states than Democrats. And that's been true for a long, long time. And so why are all these big Republican state universities run by Marxists? Why did Republicans allow that to occur? Why did policymakers not do anything about it? Republicans have been complaining about liberal bias on college campuses and the effect of that for a long, long time. So why haven't they done anything to fix it? And then you see things like this happen and you say, well, this is just the natural outpouring of decades and decades and decades of crazier and crazier people running these schools, right? And again, Columbia is just one of the schools, and that's a private school, so it's a different situation, but a lot of these schools are public schools in Republican-led states. And so I think Republicans are at least partially to blame for the conditions that caused a lot of these things to happen, because they never cracked down on any of it, even though they had the ability to do so. And I think that's completely crazy. As far as the actual issue is concerned, I'll just very briefly say this. If we take the assumption that really what's going on here, because Donnie raised this question earlier, which is really a criticism of these protesters saying, look, if you don't like what's going on in the Middle East, then okay, but what does the school have to do with it? It's not like the president of Columbia University is in charge of the Israeli military. So what is the logic here? The logic that the left has adopted, and we've seen this on climate with climate change a lot, we've seen this with a whole bunch of other issues, is they want to make it to raise awareness of an issue. They want to make as many people miserable around them as possible because they think that by doing this, they will bring people to their side, right? And so, you know, my favorite story, Donnie and I have talked about this a lot in the past, climate change. I forget what they're called, what the group is called. The ones that think that we're all going to die, like specifically.
Extinction Rebellion.
Extinction Rebellion. You know, they glue themselves to things all the time. They're always gluing themselves. They glued themselves to a bank somewhere at one point. They glue themselves to transportation and the road and all this stuff. To basically negatively affect other people's lives. Like, that's the point. So that they can raise awareness to it. Like, you shouldn't just be driving to work, working your job, paying your bills. We're all going to die soon. So I'm going to glue myself to the road and force you to think about that as a problem, right? That's the idea. So that's the leftist tactic. That's what's going on here. What's particularly insane about this is that in the case of climate change, if you believe we're all going to die from climate change, well, then I guess it makes sense to glue yourself to things and to throw yourselves into roadways and all of that stuff, because if we all are going to die, then people need to be aware of it. And we probably should do something about it, right? I just don't believe the underlying assumption. So I don't believe what they're doing makes sense. In this particular case, though, the argument that's being made by these pro, whatever you want to call them, Palestinian protesters, is that a genocide is happening, okay? That Israel is committing a genocide against the Palestinian people. And that genocide is justification for us shutting down the world in order to call attention to it, to put pressure to it, to stop it, right? But their solution is, as it was mentioned by somebody earlier, from the river to the sea. Well, what does from the river to the sea mean? It means wiping Israel off the face of the map, right? That's what it means. So if you were to say, well, what Israel is doing, attacking a specific group, not all Muslims, not all people of Palestinian descent or whatever. They're people who live in Israel who are Muslims, who have more in common with people of Gaza and West Bank than they do with Jews, right? If you're going to make the argument that Israel, the nation of Israel, attacking the government and military and, you know, a country, in essence, it's not really a country, but the territory of Gaza, is akin to genocide, then it is equally true to say that calling for Israel to be wiped out is calling for genocide of the Jews. So if we're going to play that game and say you can't attack the Gazan people without it being a genocide, anywhere in Gaza without it being a genocide, then it's equally true to say that you can't call for the end of Israel without it being a genocide. So what we have is a protest both for genocide and against genocide simultaneously. It's just, who are we committing genocide against is the issue with these particular people. And by that same logic, from that perspective, it's just pure racism. There's no other explanation for it, because the only reason they're okay with one kind of genocide and not the other kind of genocide is because one involves Jews and the other doesn't. That's the only reason that I can think of. But putting even that aside, if we're going to apply this logic of anytime one country attacks another territory or country and civilians die in the process of fighters being killed and targeted, that is a form of genocide, then every single war that has ever existed on the face of the planet is genocide. That's essentially the argument that's being made. And the same logic applied to, say, World War II, right? When you had the Holocaust and you had Nazis mass murdering Jewish people, and then the Allies come in and they destroy the Nazis, and a lot of civilians die in the process. A lot of cities are destroyed in the process. I guess that was genocide against the Germans, right? Isn't that the logic of it? And so And I guess that's I, depending on whether you're pro German or not, I guess that would be good or bad. This is the kind of logic that they're using. And it makes absolutely no sense at all, unless you look at it through the perspective of critical theory. Like, this is the only way that any of this makes any sense at all. And it's the same logic that's used on the left for everything. Critical theory is the root of almost all ideological views that the left has today. And critical theory, essentially, it's the same logic that says it's racism is wrong unless it's racism against whites. Then it's okay. It's the same logic. And the root of critical theory is that it is okay to oppress people who are viewed as oppressors in the past in order to fix a perceived injustice that has occurred at some point in history. Now, that injustice might be real, or that injustice might be made up, conjured up in people's minds. It doesn't really matter to them. The point is, if your goal is to fix a perceived injustice, you can oppress anyone you want. You can commit genocide against people. You can wipe a whole country out because they're the oppressor. And so much of the ideology of the left is focused on this idea. You group people into a particular category. You either make them the villains or you make them the victims based on their version of history, which could be based in reality or it might not be based in reality, depending on the situation. And then you get to do whatever you want to the group of people that's the oppressors. You can pretty much do anything to them. And all of this whole concept of critical theory is all rooted in Marxist thinking, which is why so many of us have been throwing around the word cultural Marxism when we're discussing all of these things. It's all based in that same idea. Okay, because read Karl Marx, read Communist Manifesto. You'll see all of this same, the roots of all of these ideas are there in Karl Marx. They were before Karl Marx too, with other people who are leftist thinkers that Karl Marx borrowed from. So this idea has been around for a long time. And the problem with it is fundamentally this. At the end of the day, if you do not protect the rights of every single individual person, if you remove that from the equation and say, we don't care about individual rights, we care about grouping people into categorizing people and then punishing some people and rewarding other people in accordance with our views of social justice, the end result is not, we don't have to speculate. We know what the end result is because we've seen this play out thousands of times throughout history. You end up with actual genocide. You end up with actual people getting killed, actual people being thrown in jail, actual people losing their rights who literally had nothing to do with whatever the grievance is. That has happened so many times throughout the course of history. The Holocaust itself was the root of that idea. Okay? The Holocaust itself was based on that. The German people bought into the idea that the Jews were somehow, despite being the minority in society, the oppressors who are in charge of all these different things, banks and all these institutions. They're pulling the strings behind the scenes. And so they're actually the secret oppressors. And if we can just kill them all off, then we will raise up all of these people who are the perceived victims. This never works, ever, 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 ever. No matter what you do, you end up eliminating people's rights. So this is why people who are on our side of pro-liberty people always take the view that you must start with the individual singular person and say that this person has fundamental human rights that cannot be violated because they do not come from government. They come from someplace else, nature or God. And once you start going away from that, you end up with all kinds of insane things and you end up down this extremely dangerous road. And unfortunately, because the right has done such a horrible, 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 horrible job of making sure that our educational institutions do not become breeding grounds for this kind of thinking, our entire country is on the road to hell. And we are seeing warning signs constantly that say, you're about to enter hell, everybody. Time to change things. We got to do something. And unfortunately, we have yet to fix the problem. and it is getting worse and worse and worse. And someday it will not just be people on a campus somewhere blocking students from going into the right building and breaking into buildings and burning down police stations and doing all kinds of crazy stuff that we've seen over the past year, different rules for different people. It's going to turn into actual violence. And at that point in time, I don't know if America can survive it. So for the love of God, people need to pay attention to this, take it seriously, and fix the underlying problem, which is these educational institutions being run by absolute radicals that would rather be king of the ashes and see America burn down to the ground than have a country that values individual rights.
Donnie, I got to expand a little bit on what Justin said, because he just hit 50 nails on the head. First of all, in terms of this being a genocide on behalf of Israel, that could not be further from the truth. I have watched this war, whatever you want to call it, very closely. Israel has bent over backwards to make sure that they are preventing any collateral damage from occurring in the Palestinian territory. They are dropping leaflets saying, "We will attack this building because Hamas is here." They are saying, "Please go south, go this way, get out of here." They are not committing genocide. That is just a complete and utter falsehood, outright lie. The genocide was committed on October 7th by Hamas when they went into Israeli territory and engaged in mass murder of unarmed civilians, including women and children. This is preposterous that these morons, these imbeciles at these college campuses cannot differentiate those two things. Two other things on this. The mainstream media, because you know that I do watch a lot of it, CNN, MSNBC, all the usual suspects are decidedly on the side of Palestine and the protesters here. So that's, I think, just adding fuel to this fire. Add in social media. Social media is also adding fuel to this fire like never before, because these morons who go and think that by watching a TikTok video for 8 seconds that they understand the history of Judea and Palestine and all this stuff, they have no clue what they are talking about. And they're there more, I think, for the social media aspects of this, taking selfies and pretending that they're cool, you know, cutting edge avant-garde protesters, because that's what matters most to them. One other thing. I strongly believe that this is coordinated and that this is a dry run for what's going to be happening in October and November. Because what they are doing here is they are using, you know, their social media communications channels to say, everybody, the BLM guys, the Antifa guys, you know, all of you, get back together again. It's been a couple of years, you know, 2020, you really did a good job in that summer making sure that, you know, the 2020 election went our way. Time maybe to do that stuff again. So I think this is absolutely a dry run for what is to come at the Democratic National Convention in mid-August here in the Chicago, you know, area, and what is probably going to be coming closer to, you know, cities all across the country come October and November. Once again, Hamas, their entire reason for being is to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Some of these students, LGBTQ for Hamas, are you kidding me? Hamas will throw you off a building if you're LGBTQ. These people are complete and utter morons. Cannot say that strongly enough.
There goes Donnie has left. There he is. He's back. Yeah, Donnie's been having a little bit of internet issues at his house. It's probably, he's being attacked by people who are don't like what we're saying. But I don't know, Donnie, if you got the... if you heard the end of what Chris said, but he was calling the majority of the college protesters morons. I think that's a fantastic segue to the video that I had prepared for today's show.
That seems fair. Yeah, let's go ahead and see one of the kind of the lead spokespeople of the Columbia protests going on here.
Why should the university be obligated to provide food to people who have taken over a building?
Well, first of all, we're saying that they're obligated to provide food to students who pay for a meal plan here.
But you mentioned that there was a request that food and water be brought in, unless I misunderstood.
To allow it to be brought in. I mean, well, I guess it's ultimately a question of what kind of community and obligation Columbia feels it has to its students. Do you want students to die of dehydration and starvation or get severely ill, even if they disagree with you? If the answer is no, then you should allow basic, I mean, it's crazy to say because we're on an Ivy League campus, but this is like basic humanitarian aid we're asking for. Like, could people please have a glass of water?
But they did put themselves in that very deliberately in that situation and in that position. So it seems like you're sort of saying, we want to be revolutionaries, we want to take over this building, now would you please bring us food and water?
Nobody's asking them to bring anything. We're asking them to not violently stop us from bringing in basic humanitarian aid.
Humanitarian aid.
We are looking for a commitment.
It should be
from
airdropped.
Them that they will not stop it. I don't know to what extent it has been attempted, but we're looking for a commitment.
And the Grubhub. All right.
Like, I'm bringing up a question about Grubhub.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Jim, yes, you were lobbying very hard to play this video, so have at it, sir.
I was. And as Linnea said in the chat there, that, you know, having a guy in a crop top who, you know, maybe looks non-binary as her security and show of force is kind of like the chef's kiss for this entire video. But, you know, as funny as that video is, I think everything in that video is what's wrong with America right now. First of all, the woman's name, she was apparently the lead spokesperson or the leader of the group at Columbia that was that taken over Hamilton Hall. So the leader of the resistance, I suppose. Her name is Joanna King Slutsky. And she's literally a PhD student. Her dissertation involves Marxist poetry.
Nice.
That is not a joke. That is
that
real.
Sounds like a joke. Are you
it
sure?
All no, sounds like
no,
a joke.
No, did you read that from Babylon B? Is that
no,
true?
No, I saw that.
Not Babylon B.
Jim's right.
Right. And so here it is. So it's everything wrong with this country, and especially our education system. So you have a privileged, wealthy, bossy, white female Marxist who is cosplaying revolution at an elite institution, and she expects no consequences for her actions because she's being trained to be part of the ruling class, and there's never any accountability for the ruling class. She also feels Columbia is obligated to feed them as they illegally occupy and destroy a building because they paid for a meal plan, right? So the institutions that they are attacking and want to bring down must follow all the rules and uphold the social contract, but they don't have to do that. In fact, they want to destroy it. That's classic Marxist training right out of Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky. If she doesn't get her way, if Columbia doesn't live up to its obligation, its promise of a nurturing community for its students, they will literally die of dehydration and starve to death. So we have here histrionic exaggeration, which is one of my favorite things about the left in these sorts of protests. So apparently they've run out of Snickers bars and potato chips that they stole from the vending machines that were inside the building. The same ones that they put in front of the doors to barricade the doors, not let the cops in the building that they had violently vandalized. And then she says that, you know what, we're only requesting the basic humanitarian aid. So here's this woman of privilege who is appropriating the suffering, the actual suffering of people who are victims of a humanitarian crisis. So this appropriation just goes, you know, she just goes right off her back. No big deal. She's status bragging, you know, by mentioning that we're on an Ivy League campus. And so they deserve all the standard perks and luxuries that come with their status, even while conducting destructive and illegal occupation of property that they do not own, right? And we also have some gaslighting. I mean, this is all in a 1 minute, 19 second clip. Gaslighting. 5 seconds. 5 seconds after demanding that the university deliver food and water, she denies that she demanded the university deliver them food and water. But the university not allowing the revolution to be catered is actual violence, but students smashing windows, pushing and herding Jewish kids away, even knocking a Jewish girl unconscious in UCLA, which is what happened. That's not violence at all. That's just righteous speech. And she also lied. She said the university is violently stopping the DoorDash guy from delivering avocado toast and vegan Thai dishes to them, I suppose. And then right after saying that, she admitted, well, actually, they hadn't done that yet. Columbia, we just want an assurance that they won't violently stop us from, you know, ordering from DoorDash or something. You know, and these people at these elite universities, they see themselves as our betters. They're the people that go on about late stage capitalism on social media on their iPhones and want to bring about the end of capitalism faster. And so we have this Marxist revolution fostered on these college campuses. And it's been, like I said before, it's been going on for decades. And it's only really now, this is one of the good things about these campuses being torn apart, is that normies, normal people who do not pay attention to this stuff the way we do, are starting to wake up to it and to the danger that these people that are well-funded and are professional agitators actually pose to our country.
Hey, Justin, do you have any problem with kind of like the response to some of these protests? Like, I know that some of these colleges have said, like, you know, they have like the right to say, like, no protesting, and what's going on here is a trespassing, therefore the authorities are going to come in and break it up. Like, I understand some of that, but I feel like there is some response that's just kind of like almost like coming in and cracking down on what is, in some of these cases, like peaceful protests. I know that there are some orders in like Texas from like the governor to crack down because of like anti-Semitic speech. And like just lately, I think a bill just passed the House that's like targeting specific speech that's going to be considered anti-Semitic or something like that, which some of these kind of Freedom Caucus libertarian type representatives are saying that is an infringement on the First Amendment. I mean, do you think that, like, maybe the response to some of this is going a little far? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that anything that has to do with limit on speech is, unless that speech is very specifically calling for violence, I would say unless that is the case, then I think any limit on speech would be, you know, probably unconstitutional if it's being imposed by a government. And so I would be completely opposed to that. Columbia University is a private university, and so they're not the government, and they have every right to crack down on speech if that's what they want to do. A public university would be different. They actually, I don't think, could make that argument at a public university. So I think it would depend on the circumstances related to that. I would say that even at a private university, other than calling for violence, and unfortunately, in a lot of cases, as I mentioned earlier, when you say from the river to the sea, you are calling for violence. That's what that means. It means wiping out the nation of Israel. Now, maybe that's okay. Maybe you're okay with that kind of speech because you're talking about maybe going to war with a specific nation. And, you know, I don't think anyone would have a problem with people saying, you know, we should go to war with Iran or something like that. I don't think that would be ever banned on a college campus necessarily. Although who knows, maybe it would, but I think that it sort of depends, but I do think that they're like that. You mentioned the bill that was just passed by the House of Representatives. I mean, I think it absolutely goes too far. I don't think that the government should be restricting people from speaking freely unless it's calling for violence, very specifically. And so I have a real, real problem with that. With that said, I think that a lot of people are conflating the freedom to speak freely with the freedom to speak freely wherever you want. And those are not the same things. You don't have the right, you don't have a free speech right to take over a street and speak freely in the street. Like, that isn't a free speech right. That's not how that works. So I think that, you know, you have the right to speak freely. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to protest, but it has to be done in an orderly way, which means you have to get a permit in the case of public protests and things like that. You have to get a permit in the case of if you're having a protest or a big assembly or something, in the case of a public university or something. And if you're not doing that, and they aren't, and you're just disrupting other people's lives, and in some cases, cornering people, intimidating people, which is a crime, that'd be harassment. You know, I think that those things absolutely should be stopped. And so what I really don't like when these kinds of situations happen is you sort of get people, they group into two camps. The people that don't like the protests end up, there's a certain segment of society that end up just saying like, let's throw the book at them. Let's silence them. Let's punish them in every way imaginable. And they get what they deserve. And then you get other people who are like, they become absolutists where oh, well, they, yeah, if they want to call for the genocide of Jews, like, they should be allowed to do that, of course, you know? And it's like, obviously neither of those things is the right approach. I think a reasonable approach is in the middle. You have free speech rights, but you don't have the right to harass people. You don't have the right to disrupt the flow of traffic. You don't have the right to take over bridges. You don't have the right to trespass. You don't have the right to break into buildings. You don't have the right to harass individual people or assault them or threaten to assault them or anything like that. You don't have the right to do those things just because you don't like a war that's going on in a foreign country, or even a war that America is involved in, if that were to be the case. And so I think there needs to be some balance here. And I'm very disappointed, frankly, although not surprised, that there are some people on the right who are taking this sort of absolutist position against anti-Semitic speech by saying, we're gonna now crack down on speech because that speech is bad. Well, I think that speech is bad, but bad and good are in the eye of the beholder, which is why you have free speech, you know? And so as Elon Musk says, like, if you're not protecting speech that you find offensive, then you're not, you know, then you don't really have free speech in that society. So up until the point where you're calling for violence, we should be a nation that allows for absolute free speech in the public square without question, without a doubt. And so I do think that there are people who have gone too far, and I hope that they reverse course soon, because as you mentioned, the House of Representatives has passed that legislation about anti-Semitic mm-hmm. speech. Who knows what's going to happen in the Senate? This could actually become a law soon. And I think that that's really, really bad.
You know,
probably unconstitutional.
What frustrates me the most on this specific example is that I can remember scores of examples in the past few years where students handing out constitutions or declarations of independence, copies of those documents on some of these public and private universities have been told, you can't do that. That's hate speech. So there is such a double standard that is being applied here. If you are coming from a rightist perspective, if you're coming from a libertarian or a free market perspective, you can't say whatever you want on college campuses. Of course not. However, if you're coming from a extreme progressive left-wing Marxist perspective, you have carte blanche. You can do whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. It is such a double standard. That to me is really what is, you know, the so like irksome about this is that what they're saying is one side has free reign to do whatever they want, say whatever they want, even take over, you know, parts of our campus. The other side, they can't even hand out a copy of the Constitution, because that's hate speech. Those two things just cannot jive.
I want to just get final comments here because we're already at an hour plus. I know that I promised that I would do Davos Watch, but my internet connection, I know that as soon as I'm halfway into it, it's going to like cut out or something like that. So unfortunately, we're going to have to delay that. Maybe I'll cut a separate video from this podcast and post that independently from today's episode. Jim, any kind of final comments on maybe this free speech thing? Because I just kind of want to reiterate, you know, something that Justin said, where it's like whether or not some of these messages can be repugnant and all of that, right. You know, cracking down on speech that you find repugnant is just kind of opens a door to a terrible precedent, unleashes a genie out of a bottle that you're not going to be able to put back in. But comments on that or any other thing that we've talked about so far before we wrap up the episode?
No, I mean, 100%. I mean, the First Amendment doesn't exist to protect speech that people agree with. It exists to protect speech that people do not agree with, or even a vast majority of people would not agree with. And if you don't adhere to that principle because you are repulsed by what somebody says, then you really don't support the First Amendment. You have to learn to live with that. You have to learn to counter that with more speech and not ban that sort of speech. I'm 100%. Foursquare against any kind of speech bans whatsoever. You know, of course, there are very, very minor exceptions to that. And Justin went over a few of those. But, you know, in principle, you have to allow speech that you don't like. And that's especially challenging sometimes, but it's what the First Amendment means. And then secondly, I would just add that Linnea Lucan here in the comments, you know, mentioned that all of these things, a lot of the stuff that the protests are doing is already illegal. And the problem is that the law is being applied differently to activists and agitators on the left than they are to people on the right. I mean, the left is right now, it must be, what is it, 100 college campuses where this sort of violence is happening and disruption and vandalism is happening. You know, I can think of two prominent examples of this happening on the right, and they were two isolated incidents. One of them, of course, being, let's just say early in 2020 in Washington, D.C. And then, you know, there's the incident that Joe Biden said spurred him to run for president, which was a lie, of course. But Charlottesville, right? And so these incidents happen on both sides, but the vast majority of this, and it's professional and it's organized and it's purposeful. Its purpose is to sow as much chaos as possible in society. And that really only happens on the left. And our legal system, I think, to be considered legitimate by all of America, needs to treat agitators that break the law equally on all sides. And I don't think we're going to see that here. I guarantee you we're not going to see that here in these university protests.
All right.
Danny, can I just chime in with two last two things? Yeah. So I remember when the Tea Party protests were happening in the Obamacare years, and they were called racist and they were called all these terrible things. The difference between what was happening in the Tea Party protest to what's happening on college campuses today could not be further apart. So I love how the mainstream media was denigrating those protests, but giving these guys a free pass.
Just on that point. Yeah. Sure. It's like, I know that a lot of these Tea Party protests, they would like leave the protesting grounds cleaner.
Clean it up. Right.
Then when they got there, it was like the old like Boy Scout rule of campgrounds and all of that. And like, I was saying this before we even recorded, like I'm a pretty, you know, principled ideological person on like a whole host of different issues. And like, I'm struggling to think of like one topic that I would find it appropriate to like, you know, chain myself across a street and prevent people from getting where they want to go. Like, I just don't know what line that is for me where I would find that like justifiable action. But all right, go ahead.
Okay. And then my second thing, PCU, a great movie made in the early 1990s about college craziness. That was a parody made in the early 1990s with Jeremy Piven and some other great actors. David Spade was in it. If you told me that in the year 2024 that this would actually happen on college campuses, I would have said, you are so crazy, off your rocker. I can't even believe you would even think that. Yet here we are.
Yep. All right. Well, we are already long here, so I want to thank everyone for joining us for this episode of the In the Tank podcast. Please join us every week for a new episode. If you are an audio-only listener catching this probably on a Friday or later, leave a review for us on iTunes. That'd be greatly appreciated. Or you can join us a day earlier on Thursdays at noon, where we are live streaming this on Facebook and YouTube and X and Rumble, and you can join the conversation, throw your comments and questions in the chat. Maybe we'll show your comments on the screen. Maybe we'll address your questions on the fly. You could also help out the show just by doing a couple of things that won't cost you more than a couple of seconds: hitting that like button, sharing this content, subscribing if you haven't already, or just leaving a comment under the video. All helps break through those big tech algorithms that prevent content like this from being shown to more people. If you'd like, you can follow us on X at In the Tank Pod, or you can send us your comments and questions to the show by emailing us at inthetankpodcast@gmail.com. Jim Lakely, where can the fine people find you?
At Jay Lakely on Twitter X, at Heartland Inst on Twitter X, and always visit heartland.org.
Fantastic. Justin Haskins, same question.
They can go to justinhaskins.com. They can also find me on Twitter and X and all that stuff at Justin T. Haskins.
Fantastic. And Chris Talgo, what do you have to pitch today?
A PCU, the movie. I think everyone should go and watch that movie, because I think it'll give everyone just a little bit of a respite from this craziness. Go laugh a little bit. It's a really funny movie. That's what Fantastic. I'm going to plug this weekend.
I literally don't think anybody has mentioned that movie in all of America in at least 20 years. So yes. Good job, Chris.
Great way to end it. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you next week.
He's a lion dog-faced pony soldier. He's a lion dog-faced pony soldier.